You're listening to Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is an hour with Dr. Robert Brennan, and my very special guest and the man of the hour and TNT regular is our own Jeremy Beck. Jeremy Beck is an independent political and media consultant with decades of experience in studying and writing about globalization and many other subjects besides. He's a member of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That's a non-profit, non-partisan association of architects, engineers and affiliates dedicated to exposing the falsehoods and revealing the truths about the collapse of the three, not just two, but three World Trade Center high-rises on September the 11th, 2001. And so there you go. We are going to go there tonight, back to 9/11. And dear listeners, fear not. We don't believe that interdimensional lizard people rule the earth. We are not flat earthers. And I assume that we're both on board that there was a moon landing. Although I think if they had failed, they probably would have made it up anyway. But I think they got it right. But 9/11 is a different kettle of fish. There are questions that need answering. And so, Jeremy, good evening.
G'day, Robert. Yes, I do not go into any conspiracy theories. What I'm talking about with 9/11 is all based on scientific principles. And there are thousands of engineers who say likewise that the official story makes no sense at all. It defies the laws of physics. So I have looked into numerous conspiracy theories on any number of subjects, and some are just really quite nonsense. But when you look at 9/11, the official conspiracy theory is the one that is actually a part of the US government and governments around the world, and the mainstream media, they're the ones that are pushing the conspiracy theory. They claim that, you had Osama bin Laden was able to overpower the biggest military power on the planet. Mm-hmm. So I think the key is the third building that you mentioned there, Building 7. Most people have not heard of Building 7. That actually collapsed on the same day. We all saw the Twin Towers collapse down at pretty much freefall. They just dropped like a stone.
They did.
But I think everyone who's old enough to remember knows exactly where they were on the day. And it's just left a real vivid picture in our minds of it's the terror of our age. So I'm coming up to be 50 years of age, and I was a young adult at the time. And anyone who was young or a teenager would have left a big impact in their lives. And after 9/11, we've seen an incredible change in the world. I think it's quite a scary change. I'm sure you would agree.
I would. But what I'd like to do beforehand, and you probably know something about this too, is for any listeners who think, no, the Americans don't have it in them to lie or to deviate from the story that they're giving us, I'd just like to point out a few facts. The first is that there's a lot of credible evidence and a lot of credible testimony that back in 1941, that the US was aware that there was going to be the attack on Pearl Harbor before it happened. And of course, the situation is that the Americans, the American public, are averse to war unless it attacks them as a country. And then, of course, a warmongering sort of military, industrial, congressional complex would need an excuse in order to enter into war. And there's Pearl Harbor. Fast forward to 1962, and there's Operation Northwoods. You heard of that, Jeremy?
Absolutely. I was actually going to mention Operation Northwoods.
Yeah. So tell us about Operation Northwoods.
Yeah, sure. Well, that was a proposed false flag operation. And at the time, it was top secret. But now it's in the official documents. You can go and do an internet search on Operation Northwoods, and it's all out in the open there. It's not widely publicized, but anyone can do a search on it. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's official public records. What it was is you had at the time General Lyman Lemetzer, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He signed off on a proposed false flag operation. They said that we could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame it on Cuba. And the casualty lists in the US newspapers would be really helpful to cause a wave of national indignation. So it was approved by all the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they were presented to President Kennedy at the time, and the Defense Secretary Robert McNamara in March of 1962. And it was a serious false flag operation to literally create a terror act to start a war. So it's just quite mind-boggling that, you know, anyone who reads those documentations, documents, they're out in the open now. It's all declassified. So it's been fairly hushed up. You know, the mainstream media doesn't really make a big deal of it, but it is on the public record. So that's a false flag record, false flag operation, which didn't go ahead because Kennedy turned it down. But it could well have gone ahead because it had the support of all the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yes, and whether or not it's a coincidence that a year after turning it down, he was assassinated. Whether or not that's a coincidence, we can but speculate. But yeah.
Well, I have a lot of suspicions on the assassination of President Kennedy. I don't know for sure exactly what happened because there are so many conspiracy theories there. And I base everything on science. It's got to be backed up by hard evidence and scientific principles. With the case of 9/11, it's just black and white. The official story just defies the laws of physics. But I just start with the 9/11 Commission, the mm-hmm. actual official report into 9/11. The two co-chairs of the 9/11 Commission, Thomas Keane and Lee Hamilton, they stated that the government established the 9/11 Commission in a way that ensured that it would fail. They wrote a book called Without Precedent, The Inside Story of 9/11 Commission, and they stated in their own words that we were set up to fail. Mm-hmm. They noted the denial of access by various government agencies to documents and witnesses necessary to have a proper investigation. They referred to NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, and the Federal Aviation Administration as among the agencies denying access to important documentation. So the official commission into 9/11 was just a fraud. It didn't really cover any of the very important necessary things that should have been covered. Now, there are many, many, many people on my side. They pretty much get ridiculed as tinfoil hatters and get blacked out of the mainstream media. But some of them are quite prominent. I'll just name a few prominent ones. Ray McGovern, he was a former CIA intelligence officer. And in the 1980s, he chaired the National Intelligence Estimates and prepared the President's Daily Brief. So in 2003... Ray McGovern, he created the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity to expose how the intelligence was being used falsely to justify the war in Iraq. And he's been very outspoken as a political activist in recent years on all sorts of issues, pretty much in the peace movement, being a former CIA intelligence officer, a very high-level intelligence officer. I mean, he's providing the president's brief to Ronald Reagan. So he's now saying that the 9/11 cover-up, he said it's either gross misfeasance or gross malfeasance is the way he described mm-hmm. the cover-up of 9/11. There's a website that I did look at, patriotsquestion911.com, and it has a whole list of numerous very high-level people on there and just quotes them and what they say. And I thought that was a useful resource, and you can go to patriotsquestion911.com just to see some of those. But one of them is Colonel Ronald D. Ray. And on the Alex Jones show, he said, "I'm astounded that the conspiracy theory advanced by the administration could in fact be true, and the evidence does not seem to suggest that it's accurate." Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman, he's since passed away in recent years, but a few years ago, he was a very active supporter of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, that the organization that I'm a member of, because I'm an engineer. I studied engineering at Monash University, got my mechanical engineering degree with honours. So there are thousands, I think there's 3,500 of us engineers and architects trained. And I know it's not easy to get your name on that list. I had to show a copy of my engineering degree before I got on the list, because there's going to be a lot of cranks out there who will try and put their names up there as an engineer, and they're not. So I knew that it was a genuine organisation, the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, because I had to show all my documentation of my engineering degree. Anyway, getting back to Lieutenant Colonel, the late Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman. So he was a very active member of the Architects and Engineers and 9/11 Truth, and he earned his PhD in aeronautics and nuclear engineering at Caltech, and retired as a lieutenant colonel after 22 years in the Air Force, which included 101 missions as a fighter pilot in Vietnam. He was director of advanced space programs for the Air Force during the Ford and Carter administrations, and he was very, very passionate on 9/11 Truth, and he pretty much say exactly what I'm about to say over the next 45 minutes. But there are many others. Lieutenant Colonel Shelton Langford, he's on that website, The Patriots Question 9/11. Another one I think is interesting is Andreas von Bülow, because he was the Secretary of State in the German Federal Ministry of Defence, very high-level government official. And Andreas von Bülow, he's just long said that 9/11 just pulls the, it has the hallmarks of a false flag operation. And there are other high-level people in government as well. Michael Meacher, the late Michael Meacher, he was a former parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Trade and former Environment Minister under Prime Minister Tony Blair. So he's a Labor Party minister. And Michael Meacher, I'll just give you a short quote here, what he said: scholars and professionals with various kinds of expertise, including architects, engineers, firefighters, intelligence officers, lawyers, medical professionals, military officers, philosophers, religious leaders, physical scientists and pilots, have spoken out about radical discrepancies between the official account of the 9/11 attacks and what they were, as independent researchers, and what they've learned. They have established beyond any reasonable doubt that the official account of 9/11 is false, and that, therefore, the official investigations have really been cover-up operations. Thus far, however, there has been no response from political leaders in Washington, or for that matter, in other capitals around the world. Our organization, Political Leaders for 9/11 Truth, has been formed to help bring about such a response. So that's former minister, environment minister, Michael Meacher. So the list goes on and on. And in the mainstream media, is virtually zip. They know this. They just cover it up, just the same way as what's happened with COVID. And I think it's very important now, because a lot of people have had a bit of an awakening in the last couple of years, because life was going along fairly normal as they would consider, and they've just got hit for, you know, just smashed. I mean, their business has been shut down. They, in Melbourne, you couldn't even go more than 5 kilometres from your home during the lockdown phase. There's been so-called vaccine mandates. I don't like to call them vaccines, but anyway, people have been smashed under this COVID agenda, and it's got a lot of people looking at various other aspects of what's going on in the world. And I think it's also opened up people's minds to other areas such as 9/11 Truth.
It is, and they are. And notwithstanding the problematic nature of the term conspiracy theory, there's a media studies professor by the name Mark Crispin Miller in the United States. And he has a great definition of a conspiracy theory, which I think has a lot of currency, and it goes something like this. You know, it's something that if true, that you can't emotionally handle. And it speaks to the fact that a lot of people, I think, don't want to go there on these various topics, because what it means just would blow their mind. It would blow their trust in all of what they take to be Western democracy and a system that works fairly and a media and a government that has their best interests at heart, although bumbles around sometimes. It's just too great a prospect to handle that it all just might be a lie. And it's, yeah. And so it's more of an emotional battle than a rational engagement with the facts. Yeah.
And very much so.
Yeah.
I think it's a war on our minds under this globalist one world order agenda, the World Economic Forum and all the agents pushing for global control and eliminating national sovereignty and treating ordinary people as human cattle. And it's a war on our minds, and the capture that they have in the mainstream media has just really got people in a state of fear. And when you get people into a state of fear, they can be manipulated.
Exactly. Like as in the fear of terrorism from afar. We're going to go to a quick ad break and then we're going to return. This is TNT.
Jesse Zurawell on TNT Radio.
Just going back to the One Health High-Level Expert Panel, or OHHLEP, which is the acronym that it's been given, I looked through their panel meetings. What really struck me, and a word that came up over and over, I'd be interested to do a search and see how many times this word was used, was surveillance. They were very, very concerned about surveillance. We know that this is not surveillance in our best interests, and it goes far beyond pharmacovigilance or track and trace. I just wanted to point that out, that when it comes to this One Health panel, they are hyper-focused, it seems, on surveillance. Again, we have to question why that is and what that surveillance will entail. They're not very specific in their notes.
Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
Papa, when we go see the twins, can we go down to the lake?
Only if Kate's with you, or Mum and I are there too.
Aww.
What are you sighing about?
I can swim.
I know you can. You're a very good swimmer. But are you forgetting the five?
How can I forget the five? You make me say it 10 times a day.
Slight exaggeration.
Fence the pool, shut the gate, teach your kids to swim, it's great. Supervise, watch your mate, and learn how to resuscitate.
Supervise, Harper, supervise. I'm Laurie Lawrence, kids alive.
Do the five.
The PCR test for monkeypox. Another crap PCR test for another crap virus. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Robert Brennan with Jeremy Beck, which is an independent political and media consultant and engineer. So, Jeremy, there's a spectrum, I guess, that would range from something like this, that it was bin Laden's guys, they struck the targets as per the media narrative, and that the only, let's call it conspiracy, was that the US government knew about it in order to engineer consent for all of the wars in the Middle East. Right on up to, I guess, the most fringe part of the spectrum would be that the buildings were detonated and they weren't struck by planes at all, rather it was some sort of advanced holographic technology or something like that. Where would you situate yourself within that spectrum? And then let's go from there.
Sure. Well, I always look at scientific evidence, and I've seen numerous conspiracy theories on 9/11, and some of them just contradict each other, so they can't all be right. And I think it's going to be based on scientific principles of physics and chemistry and so forth, and the evidence, the photographic evidence, the evidence of testimony, all the evidence that's available from reliable sources, and sometimes it's hard to to know what a reliable source is. For example, the BBC, you know, people would have once thought it was a reliable source. But I think that's an interesting one because Building 7, the third building that collapsed, it actually collapsed just after 5 o'clock in the late afternoon, whereas the Twin Towers collapsed quite early in the morning, mm-hmm. Just after the start of work. At the time, one of the BBC announcers announced that the building had collapsed, and it was just right behind her. Mm-hmm. So this was Jane Stanley, BBC reporter. She was saying, and we've just had news that the Solomons building, which is the Building 7, has just collapsed. And she would have been just reading off some teleprompter, presumably. Mm-hmm. And you could see visibly in the background, the building was still there. Mm-hmm. So someone fed the BBC some information that that building was about to come down. BBC has since not said boo about that. They've covered it up and don't want to go there. But in terms of facts, there are oodles of facts and there's oodles of photographic evidence. Building 7, it just fell, just dropped like a stone, and you can measure it actually using some kind of a grid where you can know exactly at the rate that the building is falling at and time it, as opposed to a free fall, which happens at 9.81 meters per second squared, because mm-hmm. that is the acceleration rate on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. If you drop a stone or a brick or anything, it falls at the same rate, it accelerates. And 9.81 meters a second is the speed that that falling object would be at after 1 second. And every single second, its speed will increase by mm-hmm. 9.8 meters per second. So you look at the rate that building is falling, it's literally accelerating through the path of most resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got all these structural members there, and no aeroplane hit Building 7. So how did that happen? No, that's never happened to any structural building, you know, steel frame building ever, except with a controlled demolition. And that's where you deliberately want to collapse a building and you set up explosives all the way through there. So that takes away all the structural support in that building. So it will just drop like a stone. But if you don't take out all those structural members all throughout the building, there's no way that it would accelerate through the path of most resistance. It might topple over perhaps, but there's no way it would, you know, accelerate, not just go at a constant speed, but accelerate at that. It was about 7 seconds. In the case of the Twin Towers, it was about just over 10 seconds. I think it was about 11 seconds. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just crazy. How could that just drop through there? It just makes no sense according to the laws of physics.
Yes, and as you say, this is a 47-story building, and it doesn't get a lot of recognition because it's dwarfed by the other two, but 47 is pretty high, and it's part of the World Trade Center complex. And you know, it's the first steel skyscraper to be brought down, ostensibly from the melting of its steel structure, with just a fire. Now, I've heard that it was substantially damaged from debris that sort of broke off and flew across from the main towers. But when I had a look at the video footage, it didn't look like there was a chunk out of the side of the building. And also in preparation for this interview, I looked at some other controlled demolitions, you know, like the Sands building in Las Vegas and et cetera, et cetera. And it looks like this one is actually probably the most beautiful example of a straight vertical fall controlled demolition. And yet we're expected to believe that it went down just from melting steel.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is that if you look at the official plan of the building and the tenants of the buildings, it would have been one of the most highly secure buildings in the United States, because some of its tenants were the US Secret Service, the Department of Defense, the CIA, high-level government officers in Building 7. There's no way that you know, they would allow someone to set up some controlled demolition in there, surely.
Mm. The CIA, the
Department
Secret
of Defense.
Service,
yeah.
And also the Securities and Exchange Commission, and who knows what sort of financial misdealings they could, you know, bury in molten steel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the most secure buildings in the United States, and somehow someone got in there to set it up for a controlled demolition. That's not easy to do.
And not struck by the planes. But, you know, what? One of the naysayers, I imagine, would say this. All of the controlled demolitions are very high decibel explosive events. Boom, 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 boom. And yet nobody heard that happen. So is there an explosive technology that is low sound?
I would have to disagree with you there, Robert,
okay.
Because there have been numerous witness accounts of people saying that there were boom, 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 boom. First respondents, I've definitely seen evidence of first respondents, firefighters who said it was when boom, 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 and that was exactly the words they used, boom, boom, boom.
Wow. Okay.
And there are numerous first respondents, witnesses who acknowledged explosive sounds, and not just the explosive sounds of the buildings as they collapsed. There are also pre-explosives as well,
mm-hmm.
and in the Twin Towers as well. So there were some explosive events that had happened in the base of the Twin Towers some several minutes before, and for some reason that was set up to weaken it before the ultimate major controlled demolition. So this has been analysed by a high-level research team. The research team was at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The engineering department did a major study on it. And this was specifically for Building 7. They could have done the Twin Towers, but they just looked at Building 7. They were led by Professor of Civil Engineering, Dr. J. Leroy Halsey, and his research team. They used this sort of technology, which engineers would be familiar with, is the finite element analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you look at every structural member in the building, you look at all the beams, the girders, all the bolts and everything, and you plug all the coordinate data into a computer, and the finite element analysis looks at the stresses and the strains on every single member possible in the whole building. So you'll analyze every little spot of how much stress there'll be at a particular spot in that building and particular members, structural members. So it takes a lot of work to do that, a finite element analysis for the entire building, for every single structural member. There was a budget for this project under Professor Halsey. The budget was a $316,153 budget, which is pretty small, really, considering it's quite an extensive project. But it was sponsored and supported by the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the columns, the girders, the floor beams, the reinforced concrete floor slabs, the bolts, etc., just about everything was analyzed. And their finite element analysis program used a program called SAP 2000. One of them was the one they used. And that model had 39,978 joints, 44,507 frame elements, and 7,832 area elements. So it's a lot of detail there. So that went for a few years to analyze that building, every last little inch of it. And at the end, they put out a report, and they urged any engineers anywhere around the world to critique it. They wanted debate, but generally speaking, the officials from NIST, the official National Standards Institute in the United States, didn't want to know about it, and general government departments didn't want to know about it, and most engineering bodies around the world just turned a blind eye to it. But they couldn't get people really to debate them. Just the same as with COVID. You can't get anyone to debate you on the vaccine mandates or the efficacy or the the jab injuries or any of that. Similar story. Mm-hmm. But the evidence is all there. And the final report, a very, very detailed report that Professor Halsey put out and his team. And the conclusion was that we simulated every plausible scenario and we found that the series of failures that NIST claimed triggered a progressive collapse of the entire structure could not have occurred. The only thing that could have brought this structure down in the manner observed on 9/11 is the near simultaneous failure of every column in the building below floor 17. Mm-hmm. So that's simply not going to happen unless the near simultaneous failure of just about every column, it's only going to happen with lots and lots of explosives all set up and timed to take out all those structural members.
Mm. And, you know, you commented on the 9/11 commission, but also I hear that, you know, there was around the time and in years since, there's been Popular Mechanics magazine and they published a book debunking 9/11 myths. So for any who were looking into this, do they offer credible debunkings or are they strawmanning?
I have seen that Popular Mechanics and that's a popular one. It's the same kind of thing that you'll see from the mainstream media that, you know, Dr. Robert Malone's been debunked or Dr. Peter McCullough's been debunked or any of that nonsense. It's the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They don't provide the evidence. They don't provide the scientific principles. I've seen all their arguments. They're just nonsense arguments. Mm. They're just hoping to fool some of the people who don't really have a scientific background, an engineering background, or any knowledge, in-depth knowledge. They're not trying to convince me or any of the other architects and engineers. They know we know, and they know that we know they're lying. Mm. But they're just pushing crap out there to try and fool the masses.
Mm. And so this is the Achilles heel of the whole thing. I mean, it doesn't resolve the question of what actually happened in its entirety, but suffice it to say, it seems that Tower 7 came down from a controlled demolition. So that just opens up the can of worms in an extraordinary way. But then, as you said, I mean, how do they get access there? Now, I hear with the main towers that, at least this is the way the story goes, it's that they had massive amounts of asbestos in the building and that they were in a graded fashion going floor to floor and removing some of the asbestos, but that would have given them access to the, you know, the wall cavities and da-da-da-da-da. What are your thoughts around that?
I don't know for sure. I've seen just about every theory under the sun. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the evidence is that you do the calculations on the free fall and it's clear it's a controlled demolition. Who had access to the buildings? I mean, there's all sorts of theories on the, you know, the companies managing the security and their connections. There are so many theories. There are even theories that it was nuclear explosions and things like that. You know, I'm not convinced about that. There's been evidence of thermite in the dust. And samples have been analysed by respective physicists and chemists. So I take that seriously, that there would have been some kind of explosive incendiary devices. So who actually did it? I don't know for sure. In fact, who flew the planes into the Twin Towers? Were they completely tied up with the same people who did the controlled demolition? I don't know all the answers there. Mm. You know, I've seen a number of theories on the Saudi role. There was a whole lot of papers that were actually very highly classified and they got released, the 28 pages they're called, but they were released fairly recently in the last few years. But there was a massive campaign to get the 28 pages released, and that showed a Saudi role. And Prince Bandar was very close to the Bush family, and some of Bandar's relatives were very, very, very interconnected with some of the alleged hijackers. So I don't know whether George Bush actually knew and was in on it, or whether there was another sort of deeper level of a deep state, if you like, and Bush was kept in the dark. I don't know for sure, but I'm just looking at the scientific evidence. I mean, it seems to me that there's a very, very high level in the US government, intelligence agencies who were definitely in on it to some degree, whether they were architects of the entire event or whether they knew that it was going to happen and just let it happen. I suspect that they were architects of the event just because of what we're talking about, Operation Northwoods. I can't prove it, but it just seems plausible to me that there were very high-level people in the United States military intelligence establishment who were in on it full bore. It just seems to make sense to me.
Yes, well, these are the second or third generation apprentices of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and all of them who wanted Northwoods to go ahead. So, and what about the, you know, because I hear that on the main two towers that they made insurance killing on it.
Yeah, well, certainly there's all sorts of theories around money flows and who profited on shares, insurance. I've seen it. I haven't seriously looked into that side of it that much, just because my expertise is in engineering and I wasn't particularly interested in that side of the story. I mean, it's important though. You know, money talks, and if people are making big bucks out of some terrorist event, that's certainly important to look into.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. We are going to go to another ad break. This is TNT.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
88-year-old Chuck Grassley is in the running for another six-year Senate term after winning the Iowa Senate Republican primary on the 7th of June. He will be 95 at the end of his term if re-elected in November. Grassley had a convincing win, gaining 73% of the vote versus challenger Jim Carlin's 27%. This will be a very disappointing result for Carlin, who fought an honourable campaign against Grassley. Carlin passionately fought against medical tyranny and slammed Grassley's record in supporting vaccine travel passports and the government agencies which helped to enforce vaccine mandates. He noted that Google and Big Tech were among Grassley's top 20 donors and that Grassley voted with the Biden agenda 54% of the time. But for whatever reason, former President Donald Trump endorsed Grassley, not Carlin, and this likely sealed the result. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
The bushfire was so unpredictable, it was important to have a plan.
We stayed up to date with our phones and the radio. We knew it was coming.
I never thought it would actually happen. I'm glad we had a plan.
You have to prepare your property and your family.
Always had a plan.
We can all be bushfire ready. Do your 5-minute bushfire plan today.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you. Yeah, there's something for you
at the Men's Shed. Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is Robert Brennan, my very special guest, Jeremy Beck, and you might have heard his voice also in one of the sound bites of the news during the ad break. And so, Jeremy, we talked about the Achilles heel, that being Tower 7, but what about the main two towers? You got two very large planes that go into them, a lot of jet fuel. Is that enough to bring those two incredibly large buildings down?
The answer is no, and I looked at that very, very carefully at the time. And what I did is I plugged in just a very basic calculation on a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at every single floor and I plugged in one floor as would be each row in the Excel spreadsheet. And I did some calculations on conservation of momentum. And just with that alone, just assuming that there was no structural support at all, just considering the fact of the momentum, as one floor hits the next floor going down and hits the next floor going down, you've got to have a momentum transfer and this conservation of momentum. Mm-hmm. And just doing those calculations alone, just being extremely generous to the official theory that it was some pancake collapse, I calculated it would be around about a 15-second collapse if there was no resistance at all from the standpoint of the structural members, but just from the standpoint of conservation of momentum, it just would be physically impossible to collapse at that speed in around 10 or 12 seconds, mm-hmm. Just that alone. But then again, there are many other factors, and I was being very generous to the official theory, but there are many other factors which showed that it would never even collapse at all because the structural support, those buildings were designed to withstand all sorts of major forces, and including an aeroplane flying into it. They were designed to withstand an accidental aeroplane impact. And I know that there are architects who testified to that point. The rate that they collapsed was approximately freefall, not quite, but very, very close to it. And you have a look at the squibs as well. The squibs are the projected material that goes out, and that's where you have the explosives, and you'll see a whole lot of concrete dust and just material just shoots out. Mm-hmm. And that was shooting out just below the line of collapse. So they collapsed down, and just under that line of collapse, you saw this big lot of thing that just shot out from the building, and it was like a cloud of dust or something. And really what it would be is just pulverized concrete. They call them squibs. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that is very prominent in any controlled demolition. You see just a whole lot of dust spurred out where there's the explosive, which is pretty much pulverized concrete. Then you have a look at the beams that were just like projectiles. And in an ordinary collapse, there's no way that you'd have some projectile just shooting out laterally, mm-hmm. at very high speeds. You could clock them at very, very high speeds just shooting out, which would take explosive force. There are many signs. The amount of pulverization of the concrete would take an enormous amount of energy. That's explosive force. That's not just floors collapsing on each other. It's enormous explosive force. So the whole idea that it would happen from some progressive fall is just absolutely ludicrous. So it's beyond me that how anyone could seriously believe it.
Mm. Okay, yeah. And you're mentioning earlier about how the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth commissioned a sort of a modelling study that was a very vigorous one that found in favour of the group's hypothesis. But the so-called debunkers come up with their own modelling, computer modelling, which is, no, it's just all jet fuel and melted steel. And so, you mentioned COVID earlier, and so this is once again this example of how the modelling is at odds with reality, and yet we have this modelling foisted upon us as if it tells us something about reality and as if we're compelled to believe it.
Yeah, well, sometimes, your little primary school kid mm-hmm. actually says, the emperor's naked, mm-hmm. and all the adults are admiring the beautiful clothes of the emperor, and that's the famous story. But quite often, a child would just state the obvious, whereas mm-hmm. these academics who are trained to be politically correct will go into all sorts of contortions mm-hmm. to come up with some fanciful stories, which just make no sense. But anyone with any idea of how the world works, just look at the video footage of those twin towers collapsing, mm-hmm. and anyone who's got half a brain knows that just doesn't happen in the real world. You've never seen that happen at all, except when there is a controlled demolition. It just has never happened. So you've got, in the one day, three buildings all falling down at close to freefall speed, and then the officials claim that No, it wasn't controlled demolition. Pull the other one.
Okay. So if the most parsimonious formulation of the events then is that there was a controlled demolition that was, of course, prepared in advance, but then they would have to then be aware that Bin Laden's guys were going to fly the planes, that they had the plans to fly the planes into the buildings, which would indicate that in that awareness, once again, they're letting it happen, and it's to engineer the consent of the American people to enter into wars in the Middle East, which are, well, I mean, they've just pulled out of Afghanistan, but otherwise they've been going for 20 plus years. And so, okay, but do you have any other speculations beyond that?
I see it as part of a bigger process of the globalist agenda to eliminate the sovereignty of nation states, to get people into a state of terror that they can be tracked and monitored, similar to what COVID is. It's just another level where people just submit to more and more powers and controls. Now we can't travel in some cases unless we have a so-called vaccine passport. Under 9/11, before then, I remember flying to United States in the year 2000 or 2001, just before September. So I went to United States a couple of times before 9/11. And I remember one time asking the hostess there, would it be okay that I can check out the cockpit? And she said, oh, okay, it should be okay. I'll just check. And that's okay. The pilots aren't too busy right now. Can I just check your passport? And I just showed her, oh, yeah, no worries. We'll take you up to the cockpit. And so I had a good chat with the pilot and the co-pilot, and it was all hunky-dory. You wouldn't even dream of asking to go into the cockpit, but today you'd probably, risk being handcuffed and who knows what. So it's just changed the whole world. The people in a state of terror, and after 9/11, all these extra controls have been on us. The fear is quite subtle, but in some ways not so subtle. And it's just all part of this bigger globalist agenda. The justification of going in, Iraq supposedly had weapons of mass destruction. Of course, they didn't. The agenda, as I said, is to eliminate the sovereign nation state. This goes back to a Western power, pretty much the City of London and their Wall Street bankers are hand in hand, part of this globalist operation. And they've infiltrated governments all over the world. In fact, I know Richard Gage, who set up the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, he actually fell out with the current leadership, so he's got his own separate organisation. But I'm still in contact with him, and I did an interview with him the other day, and he mentioned that he's in contact with John Perkins, and I think that's an interesting point here, because John Perkins wrote a book called The Confessions of the Economic Hitman. Are you familiar with that book?
No, I've heard the title, but it's probably one of those books that I always intend to read. But I'm one of these guys who's a great collector of books who doesn't read. So, yeah.
No, it's an interesting topic because it's related to what I'm saying with the globalist agenda. And the whole point of it is that John Perkins was an economic hitman. His job was to go in there to wine and dine leaders around the world in various different third world countries and other countries to get them to sign on to various economic deals along with the International Monetary Fund and the whole Western globalist agenda, which would end up suiting the big cartels, the Bechtels and the military-industrial complex and the big corporations that are aligned with the City of London and the Wall Street bankers and the financial oligarchy. And John Perkins wrote this book to say that was his job. And if he didn't convince these leaders around the world, well, then they'd send in the jackals. And the jackals were basically special operations groups, intelligence agencies with various different plans to take out leaders, just literally kill someone would have a so-called accident, and take out various people and, use physical force and knock people off. And if that doesn't work, he said, well, then the final resort is they go to war. And we've seen that. We've seen that in Libya. Libya was one of Africa's most successful countries. And they've just ruined it. Yes. You know, it's just a failed state.
Hillary Clinton, she they came, they saw, he died.
Yeah. And it's absolutely criminal what they did there. It's the same crowd. So obviously they weren't able to do their deals with Gaddafi there. And, you know, they just took it over, just bombed the place out. Iraq, yeah, you look at Saddam Hussein, strong man, and he was made out to be some terrible dictator. And, you know, he was a hard leader and no doubt, you know, he had his faults and people would have got on the wrong side of him, might not have lasted too long. But I know people who lived in Iraq under Saddam Hussein and they said it was a hell of a lot better under him than what they've got now.
Yes, well, that's the thing. It's the clash of an idealistic vision, at least as superficially stated, and the reality that every time they go in and try and spread peace and democracy, it backfires, or just about every time.
Yeah. Well, you know, you see this time and time again. You know, where they're told, you know, we're told in the mainstream media that you know, you got this horrible dictator and they're doing terrible things to their people. They're pulling babies out of the incubators, as in the case of Iraq. We had Saddam Hussein's human shredding machine and all the rest. It was all proven to be lies. Justification for getting the war going. We're seeing the same thing over and over again, and now we're seeing it in Ukraine. You're told that Ukraine's a democracy and all the rest, and Putin's some evil tyrant, and the story is much, much more complex than that. But the mainstream media just make it so simplified, but there's much more to it everywhere. And at the end of the day, this is all about a globalist control, one world dictatorship, eliminate sovereign nation states, population control, reduce the population, literally kill us off. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but you only have to listen to their own words.
And although, you know, you want to take care of the livestock, you want to keep it in a number that's kind of good for whatever the ends that you have in mind, but still, you can't kill off too many of your livestock. Now, returning to, we talked about the two towers. We talked about tower number 7. But what about the Pentagon? Do you have an engineering problem with that one? Because, of course, you know, some say that the damage could only have been inflicted by a missile. Some speak of the plane and say, well, I mean, he can't have gone at such a low altitude at such a high speed and gotten dead on target, because it's just like a lump of concrete amongst many other lumps of concrete when you're coming in at low altitude. So what's your thoughts around the Pentagon?
I've looked at it a lot and I have my doubts. I've heard all sorts of stories and I don't know 100%, but I haven't seen any video footage of an aeroplane flying into the Pentagon. And that seems quite bizarre to me. I would have thought there'd be enough video cameras all over that area, being the Pentagon, that we would see some video footage of an aeroplane clearly flying towards it and crashing into it. But we've just seen a few little shots that didn't really look like a plane. So it didn't look convincing to me. I wouldn't be surprised if it was some missile. I don't know for sure. I've heard all sorts of theories and some seem convincing, just wouldn't know 100%.
Yeah, that just begs the question, if it is a missile, what happened to the aircraft? And I mean, some people way out on the fringe would say that something like, you know, that the aircraft didn't exist. But it makes you wonder. I mean, if you got 300 people on board, if you looked at all those names and you went to all of the towns in which they are said to have came from, would you not find a family grieving? Or, I mean, I don't know.
Good question. And I haven't done that. But, yeah, if someone did have a list of the passenger lists on those planes and literally had an interview with some of the relatives, you'd get some answers there. that I haven't done that. So I don't know if anyone has.
But we've got to start with tower number seven. That's the Achilles heel, isn't it? Yes. And so you've been with Robert Brennan and my very special guest, Jeremy Beck, and we've opened your eyes and ears perhaps to some questions around 9/11. And this is TNT. Good evening.